Mr. Pongo.
Yes, ma'am.
We finally have Mr. Pongo here in the WGN Radio studios.
Lord. Don't do this to me again.
And I can only hear out of one side of my headphones.
I don't even have headphones. You see how you do me? You see this?
There we are. Yeah, there we are. All right. Yeah, welcome, Mr. Pongo. You know?
See how she does me.
You know, I'm dealing with some issues, some deep issues right now because I feel neglected.
I know.
You know, we went through the whole background check because this is like a real relationship, Doma T. We are now dating.
Yeah.
I don't know if we got married yet, but we're dating. I don't know how that.
No, we're married. We're a podcast.
We can't be married going couple. At this rate, man.
I know.
Because
I work too much.
He works never too around. Much. He's never around. I don't know the last time we ever went out to eat. I can't remember. You know, when I talk to him, he's looking at his phone.
It's bad. Fellas, I don't know if y'all go through this too, but it happens in podcast marriages as well. It's a lot of exciting stuff that is going to help Shypedia. I'm doing this for us.
You know, I don't want to, you know. This is just too common, Doma T.
I know.
This is what happens in relationships where you always put work before your family.
But you know, it's to feed the family. It's to feed the Shypedia family. I got some exciting projects coming up that I can't wait to tell you about, Marsha. It's gonna be worth it. I'll make the family proud. I'll get us some bacon and then we can have a nice steak dinner.
Well, we
bring home the bacon and we have a steak
pork,
dinner.
Yeah. We're okay.
You don't eat pork?
I don't eat pork.
I didn't know that.
No,
I'm trying
to. Well, if you took me out to eat a little bit more, you probably would know.
Ouch. Well, you got me here. What we got? What we got
all
going
right,
on?
All right. We got a lot
while
going on.
Okay.
You know, I feel like all right, I'm not gonna go there, but. But what I do know, though, honey, is that you leaving me again. And
it's
you
true.
Traveling far.
I'm going to Africa.
And you're not even taking me.
I'm going to Africa. I'm sorry, Marsha. I emailed you.
He's
you
going. Said, you're going to
you
Wakanda?
Said you didn't get the email. I think it's a lie. It was on domat.net/Ghana. I invited all of Illinois to come to Africa with me. And Marsha decided not to join me.
I did not get that memo.
But we do a group tour.
With it.
I'm telling you. But we do a group tour to Africa. Well, I do a group tour to Africa every year. And the goal is to take at least 20 people every time that I can. Man.
And you have, right?
And I have. The first year we took 25 people. Last year in 2017 we took something close to 25, maybe 23 people, and this year we're taking 20.
You know, Doma T, you have a lot of followers. You have a good following.
Not, you know what it is? What's funny? A lot of people have a lot more followers, but I think I get a lot of engagement, and I have
you
a close
have
relationship
the right
with
followers.
Yeah, I remember. I keep quoting Reid Hoffman. Well, this interview with Reid Hoffman, who founded LinkedIn, and he said it's better to have 100 people that love you than a million people that kind of like you. And I think that's the realest thing. So I got like 100 people that love me. And so it seems like a lot of folks.
That's okay.
But it's just a few people, but they
that's
really
okay.
They really support
and it's
me.
It's more than 100.
Yes.
Anyhow, you are originally from, well, your heritage is Ghana.
Yeah, both my parents from Ghana. Yep.
Yeah. So now you're traveling back to Ghana as a host.
Yes.
And you've done this numerous years.
Yes. This is the third year in counting.
Okay. Now, you're going as a host. Does this consist of you being a tour guide or what? Are you telling people?
Not quite. So we go through a separate company that's going to be the formal tour guide. Folks who grow up and live in Accra in the Volta region and all the places that we're going. And they'll show us, they'll give us a full formal tour. But I don't know enough about Ghana, unfortunately, to be a tour guide. I'm really scared as to why you're asking these questions. Marsha always surprises
me. You know,
me.
I just wanted to make sure you was well informed on the things that happens in Ghana or just the history.
I feel a trivia game coming.
I do feel a trivia game coming.
What we got, man? Okay.
You know, I like to
but
dig
I'm just
deep.
I'm gonna warn you. I'm not gonna be good at it.
Come on, you may be.
And so the people at who are listening at home on a treadmill, have you listening to this? Don't laugh at me. As Marsha asks these questions, I don't even know what's about to happen. I guess you're going to ask me questions.
All right, let me
as Marsha asks
notes.
These questions, try to answer them too without hitting Google.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to give you 5 questions.
Okay.
Could be 3, but I'm going to do 5.
Okay.
Just in case they're not deep enough or hard enough.
Uh-oh.
Can you give me the name of a learned storyteller, an entertainer, or a historian, someone to
you
carry
mean a griot?
The...
A griot?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Woo-woo. Okay. Woo-woo. Okay, not too bad. I got you. Okay.
Yeah, so a griot is a person, someone of the family that carries on the heritage.
Yeah, in African culture, and in most African cultures, it's an oral tradition. Oral tradition, meaning all the stories passed down verbally. So, you know, your grandfather tells you these stories, you remember them, you tell your grandkids, and so on and so forth. And that's how the family history remains. And so,
okay, so yeah. Is that the direction that you're headed?
The crazy thing about it, it's funny you say that, because I was just talking to my dad about this. My dad and I, another one of those projects I'm telling you about, my dad and I are working on a manuscript that may turn into a book. So I'm co-writing a book with my dad. And he talks about the family history. And, you know, as a journalist, we're griots. We're storytellers.
Yes,
you know?
You are.
And so,
and you're an entertainer.
Yeah, entertainer and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, so I'm stepping into that purpose. Which is crazy. Which you're a griot too. Or griot. Some people call it a griot. You're a griot too?
Griot.
Okay.
I'm a griot.
Okay,
you think bad. So?
You are.
Okay.
You are. You're the queen of Shopedia. The queen of Wakanda. What else we got?
All right. So let's see. What will be a little challenging for you?
No, don't go too challenging. Go with the easy questions you got, because I can handle that. I got that one. I can handle that one.
What empire preceded Ghana?
What empire preceded? What, the British Empire? Which was owning it? Or what do you mean? What do you mean by preceded Ghana?
From my research, okay, Ghana, hold on, let me pull it up. Let me have the right words for it. It lost its power.
Okay.
And then so people left Ghana and went where?
People left Ghana and went where? Nigeria?
No.
Because they used to have, there was a thing where a lot of Ghanaian refugees.
It's another West African kingdom.
The Ivory Coast? I don't know. What's the answer?
Mali.
I started to say Mali.
Okay.
But the Mali kingdom. Wow. Okay. I thought Mali, but I didn't know exactly what you meant. Okay.
Yeah. So,
there we go.
You know, I'm learning a little bit for myself.
Yeah. Educate us. So tell us about the Mali kingdom.
So then came Mali.
So at one point. The richest man in the world was Mansa Musa.
And he Musa.
And he was the imperial.
Now he was killed.
Yeah, and he was the emperor of the Mali Empire. And he was so rich that when he and his caravan would go through different towns, they would give away everything they had, give away gold, food, etc. And he would actually leave some of his soldiers there to build families there and to pick them wives from that area so that when he passed back through, they had a foothold in that country. And just by passing through, he would cause inflation in all of these areas because he gave them too much wealth, and it took 10 years for them to recorrect their currency because he created too much wealth too quickly in one time passing through. But he was the richest man in the world for a long time.
Wow.
And that's Musa. And actually, really quickly, and it's rumored that Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler are working on the story of Mansa Musa. Ryan Coogler directed Black Panther. Michael B. Jordan was Killmonger in Black Panther. They're supposed to be working together on the story of Mansa Musa next.
Ooh, that's good to know.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that.
Thank you for that, Domati. So this leads to my next question. Ghana became very rich as a result of what?
Ooh. It's gold.
Okay, and what else?
It's cocoa.
I don't know about the cocoa.
Ah,
I'm in love with the cocoa.
In love with the cocoa. What else are some natural resources that come from Ghana? All I can think of is gold.
So it was the salt gold trade.
The salt gold trade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That was between the West and North Africa.
Got it.
And this trade was very important. And Ghana came to control not only gold and salt, but also the trade routes that went through their land. And you just talked about that.
Wow. Amazing. This is fun. This is good. I'm learning. I'm taking notes. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. What else we got? Let's keep it going.
Okay. Let's see. Which group founded Ganda. Did I say that right? Did that sound right?
No. Which group founded Ghana? Which group? Uh-huh. What do you mean? Founded the nation, like the founding fathers?
Yeah.
Do you mean after colonialism?
Yeah. Well, no.
Okay. That I don't know. Which group founded Ghana?
All right.
Ghana?
So Ghana was the first great African empire mm-hmm. of the Western Sudan. Mm-hmm. Now, historians believe that this particular group founded Ghana as early as the year 300. And it thrived until around 1200.
Okay.
Which group was this?
I have
this?
No idea.
Okay.
Who is it?
See, you may need to know this when you go. Sonike, S-O-N-I-N-K-E.
I hadn't even heard of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Sonike. Okay, last question.
Wow, that's
amazing. I don't know
amazing.
If this is five, but we're going to keep
it
moving.
Let me talk about this real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
As you're just putting this out there, it's just making me think of different things. I remember I read King Leopold's Ghost, and it was the story about how these different countries had a conference. And at this conference, they took a map of Africa and basically took a pencil and carved out which pieces of the country they would rule. They would go in and take over. And so a lot of West Africa was all put together, was called the Gold Coast. The Africa mm-hmm. was spelled differently. Ghana did, you know, all of these countries had different boundaries. Colonizers, you know, the Portuguese, the British, French. That's why, you know, they speak English in Ghana. That's why they speak French in Cote d'Ivoire and in the Congo and all of these things. And the thing was the Berlin Conference. That was the conference where the European countries did all of this.
Yeah. The name Ghana means what?
Ghana means what? I don't know. Has something to stand for, have something to do with gold?
Yeah, one of the meanings.
One of the meanings.
Yeah.
Yeah, gold. That's all I know. What?
Okay, so one of them is warrior king, and the other is king of gold.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
So there we have it, people. Doma T
awesome.
Is leaving us for a week, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be back.
So he's going to Ghana, and really, this is a good time because right now we have Black Panther, another warrior.
Yes.
A warrior king.
For sure.
This movie right here is such a historical.
And while people are interested in this, man, I hope it sparks some interest in getting reconnected to African kingdoms that really exist. You know, African countries, I should say.
Yeah.
That really exist, man. I've been doing this group tour for a long time. And, you know, it's interesting to see because of the movie how many people are so much more interested now. Yeah. Are actually coming back and asking, yo, don't you go to Ghana? Don't you? It's amazing. So, I mean, the fact that it took a movie, the fact that a movie had the ability to spark this interest
in the continent
is just, it's amazing.
And you may start seeing more people try to visit the motherland. And, you know, this film, I don't care that they're just now getting more involved and more interested in the culture. So what?
Right.
The right time is any time is the right time.
Yes, yeah, so that's
absolutely
true.
So great.
Yeah, I love it.
Great. It's time for change.
It's just time.
We need to start pulling those pants up now.
Right. And it's time to hear your interview with King College Prep.
Oh, yeah.
You had a chance to.
Yeah. You know, so I did have a chance to go out to the theaters the weekend that the movie was released, and I headed over to the Studio Movie Grill. This was by an invite from King College Prep, the band director.
Southside High School, super dope high school, a lot of friends who went to King.
That's
Shout out
right.
to King College Prep.
That's right. Mr. Benjamin Washington, he invited me over, and he actually brought out his jazz band orchestra to perform afterwards. And I got a chance to talk to him, and I got some coverage from the awesome band.
It's amazing.
It was crowded that weekend.
It was amazing. I saw somebody dressed up as Black Panther in your Instagram.
Yeah,
who was that?
They had a lookalike.
How much did he look like Black Panther?
Well, this is the one that you're going to catch at a child's birthday party, but that's okay.
with the baggy suit on.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't have the muscles. He's probably smoking a cigarette through the mask.
Well, you know, he may look more like a bee or something, but that's okay. He's an all black
I just pictured Krusty the Clown from The Simpsons, like the honorary mascot. Okay.
It's okay. But people was going crazy when they saw him, though. People was taking pictures. You know, they was just living in the moment and enjoying it.
Later on in this episode, you get to experience our interview and conversation with judges, Cook County judge candidates, Toya Harvey Adrian Davis. Had a great conversation with the two of them on a whole range of issues, not only about their careers and roles as lawyers and judges, but also about how they came up being girls from Chicago, at one point becoming women of the court.
This is a great way to open up Women's Month. We closed out Black History Month. It was a lot of good things happening for February, and now we're into March, and we're opening up with women.
That's
representing.
Dope. That's dope.
And representing
hard. And now to kick us off and launch us right into Women's Month, we're going to talk to Lonnie Love, a comedian and actress and also co-host of The Real. Check it out. Welcome to Shopedia. We're right now talking to someone who I've had a chance to grow up watching. Super excited to talk to her. She is now the host of The Real. But if you are really in tune with Black culture, with Black comedy, with comedy period, you know her from Soul Plane. She was on Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. You've seen on some of your favorite shows. She's been on Ellen DeGeneres. But again, my sister's favorite show, my co-host's favorite show, The Real. Y'all get it in on The Real, man. Y'all rile people up. Y'all inspire people. She's an Emmy Award winner. She's won NAACP Image Awards. None other than comedian Lonnie Love. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How y'all doing?
I'm good. My girl Marsha, she's out in Indiana. You know, she left me all in the studio by myself, but that's even better because I get a chance to have y'all to myself, Lonnie Love. So I'm feeling especially good right now. You know what I'm saying?
You're
going to be headlining at the Chicago Improv out here at 5 Woodfield Road in Schaumburg, Friday, Saturday. You got a lot of dates and double dates on top of that, man. Y'all selling out.
Oh, it's so sweet. I'll be there on Friday and Saturday. I won't be there on Thursday, but Friday and Saturday I will be there. And it's going to be a good show. I bring my boys, Mike, James, and Deshaun Ross. And, you know, we love Chi-Town. We love Chicago. The people are always good. It's a great club. There's plenty of room. So I tell people, bring your cousins, your mama, come out and get a laugh. And days like this, and times that we're going through, we need to laugh. So that's what we try to provide.
Absolutely, man, and we thank you for providing it. You know, you come from Detroit, which is our neighbors right over here, and you talk about, you know, times like these, how much we need to laugh. Like when you think about your sets and your comedy and how you put it together, how much do you think about the things that are going on in the world right now? You know, how do you craft your jokes around what's happening? Is your goal to make people not pay attention to what's happening out there, or do you make fun of it and use that to kind of be the cornerstone of a good joke?
A little bit of both. You know, it's just so much, people are so sensitive right now that you just want to remind people that we're all in this together. So my stand-up is more towards the unity and togetherness more so than, but then there's just some things that even, you know, that I've been crafting that would even make people go, okay, even if you are for or against or you're left or right, you would be like, okay, then that's funny. And that's what comedy is about. Comedy is about taking something that, you know, could necessarily be a conflict and making it funny. But then I also talk about myself. I talk about pop culture. I talk about just about anything, you know, because that's what, you know, stand-up is. It's one of the last forms of art forms where you can have creativity and be free to laugh and speak about things.
When you do get serious and you talk about, you give those inspirational messages, like, you know, you said not too long ago, you tweeted earlier today, don't be afraid to speak up.
To sum it all up, it shows what the power of one person being aware can do.
Yes.
And not only in sex trafficking, in mass shootings,
yes,
in kidnappings, in just everyday life, That is the power that one person, when you think you don't have power, yes. you think that you don't mean anything, you mean a lot. Yes. Okay? So
save
just be
lives.
Aware. And if you yes. see something, you say something.
Talk a bit about what brought you to bring that message, because I didn't get a chance to see this that whole episode, but I was real curious as to what made you say that, and what in what ways have you used your position to exercise your power and encourage other people to do the same?
Well, I mean, we were talking about the fact that it was based off of a topic where there was this airline flight attendant that saw two girls that didn't look right. And it turns out that because she spoke up, she was able to recognize that they were being trafficked. And so she was able to, you know, save their lives. And so basically it only took that one person to help, you know, change something. And I think that's what we have to go back to, you know, nowadays is looking out for each other, you know, and, you know, not necessarily being nosy, but if you see something that's not necessarily correct or in your eyes, you know, and black people, we're really good at that. We're really good at looking at something and going, oh, I don't think that's right, you know.
Right.
And people in general are good at looking at it, too. And speak up, because you could have the power to change something, change it for good. So that's where that came from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. I love it. And it speaks to why it was funny, because as Marsha and I were talking about, you know, having you on and talking about our favorite comedians, specifically our favorite black women comedians, and exercising the power and how valuable it is to have a show like The Real, where you guys have space to talk about these issues. And we see women of color really having a chance, the space and the time to really dive into these things in a way that we wouldn't see on other shows where we aren't represented that much. And it made me think about how black women are represented in the comedy world, especially this debate about Monique and Tiffany Haddish and deals and what goes on. Can you shed some light on what it's like being a black female comedian and what negotiations are like, without talking about Monique's thing specifically, unless you have an opinion on it? I'm just really curious to see, from your purview, what is it like navigating this space as a black woman comedian, especially with all of the disparities and inequities that come with that?
Well, I mean, whether you're a black female comedian or you're a black actor or, you know, a black director, you don't have as many opportunities. And because you don't have as many opportunities, you know, when you do get an opportunity, you may not have as much experience as everybody else. And so basically, a lot of people in the industry base, you know, your worth on what your experience has been. But, you know, the root problem is that you're not allowing us to have that many opportunities.
Right.
So speaking from a female comic point of view, it took me 15 years to get on a daily show. I mean, I've been, you know, that's what people don't, you know, understand. I've been a road comic for over 15 years, and I've had deals and movies and all kind of things. And, you know, finally, you know, I got The Real. And even with that, you know, it's not necessarily what we have to, because they look at us as a minority group and everything. We're not necessarily getting paid the money that we should be getting paid.
Mm.
But that's what you deal with, you know, in this industry. You have to, you know, because you don't have opportunities, you know, you just don't. And I think that now you're seeing that a lot of black females are starting to speak out. I mean, it wasn't just Monique that spoke out. It was Viola Davis who spoke out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people want to say, oh, well, you know, Monique doesn't have as much as Dave Chappelle. Well, then, okay, let's look at Viola. Viola broke it down and said, you know, I've got an Emmy. I got two Tonys. I have an Oscar. And I'm still getting paid a tenth of what Caucasian actresses are getting. And that is a shame. So if you know, if that's happening to Viola, you know it's happening down on our, you know, and it's been shown time and time again. I mean, you know, everybody has a story. But, you know, what can we do about it is the question. And everybody has a different way of trying to negotiate and work and do something about it. But the root The root problem is we have to have more opportunities. And when we get those opportunities, we should be paid equally and fairly as our counterparts. And nothing is wrong with that. I mean, if something is successful and it makes money, you should be paid for it. You should be paid just like everybody else. But there is discrimination and there is racial and gender bias, especially when it comes to black women. And that's just a fact. Nobody can argue with that. Nobody. Yeah, and this just doesn't happen in the industry. I was an engineer for 8 years. And in my fifth year being an engineer, there was an audit done by the U.S. government because there was pay discrepancy. And when they went in and audited the company I was working for, they did find that, you know, the males were getting way more money than the females, and especially the black females. So they had to go back, readjust our money, and they had to pay us retroactively. So this is happening not just in Hollywood. You know, it's happening across the board. And unless somebody speaks up about it, you know, it's just going to keep on going. So we have to speak up about it.
Your whole story is so inspiring to me, too, because not only an electrical engineer, but went from having that electrical engineering degree from Prairie View A&M to being a digital influencer ambassador for Ford Motor Vehicles on the other side of it. So you've come to the point where you fought through that discrimination, worked from that space, going into the entertainment space. How did you even get from electrical engineering to comedy? How did that happen?
Well, I mean, I started doing comedy in college, and I was just, you know, doing different things. And then, but I always wanted to have what they say, have a little backup. So since I was in college, I might as well get my degree. So I went on ahead and got my degree. But once I started working, I realized that's not what I wanted to do. And so, you know, I was unhappy. And I just went to a comedy club one day, and I realized there weren't a lot of women, you know, out there, you know, getting their voice out there. And so that's when I started. And it took me about 7 years. And one day I built up my act. I started getting, notice and exposure. And then one day we had a layoff and I went to my manager. I said, save a job and, you know, lay me off. And he looked at me like I was crazy, but I was determined to leave. And that's what I did. And I never looked back. And it was hard. It's still hard at times because, you know, I'm still working on other things. I'm, you know, trying to get my own show, my own sitcom, and, you know, you do deals and things like that. And that's just, it's just the nature of what we do. This is what we do. When you're entertainers, you're entertained. You know, that's why I'm coming to the Chicago Improv. I love, you know, actually seeing the people, but it's really hard. It's hard work to, you know, I just did. I did 7 shows, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I did a total of 7 shows. Now I'm going to get on a plane, and then I'm going to do another 4 shows. So when people say, you know, we don't work hard, we work hard. But we pay for what we do. And, you know, you can't take it for granted. And I don't take it for granted that, you know, people come out to see me, and I try to give them the best show that's possible, and they walk away with a smile on their face. But it's not easy. The reason why you don't see a lot of females on the road, because it's hard. If you got a baby, if you got a man, if you got, you know, family, you don't want to get on the road and leave them for 2 or 3 days. No way, you know, everybody ain't going to watch your baby every week. That's why you don't see as many female comics. So when you see a Monique, you see a Tiffany, you know, you got to understand that they sacrificed.
Mm-hmm.
They sacrificed missing a lot of their family. And you know, like Monique has children. Wanda Sykes has kids. You know, you have to get up and leave. So it's not an easy role, but we do it because we love the craft and we love the people. And that's what's important.
How do you balance in all that hustling, keeping it going, especially you've been going nonstop for 15, 16 years. How do you find the energy to keep doing it, and what keeps you grounded?
Well, what keeps you grounded is just being true to yourself. You take breaks when you need to take breaks, but then when you need to go, you need to, you know, you get out and you go. And that's what's important. But if you need to take a break, take a break. I think that, you know, it's important to stay, you know, to check in with family. them, and, you know, you take some time with yourself, but also, you know, you ask yourself, why are you doing it? You know, and I enjoy doing it, you know, but, you know, it's important, you know, as just females in general, to make sure that you check in with yourself, that you, you know, you take some time for yourself, but then you still have to hustle and work on your craft. And that's what happens. I mean, on the show today, on The Real, you know, we interviewed Ava DuVernay. It was a pre-tape. And, you know, this is a woman who used to be a publicist. She used to, you know, be a publicist for directors. And now she's a director with a $100 million movie. And that's because she worked hard. She worked hard. She did what she needed to do, you know, and now she, you know, she became on Disney's radar. So you can't sit back and say that it can't happen. It can, but it takes a lot of hard work and sacrifice, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One more before you go. You're inspiring the mess out of me. I got to say that right now. But who was the interview that you've gotten that inspired you? I mean, you talked to the Obamas. So I don't know if that's the one. I don't know if it's Ava DuVernay. Who was the interview that inspired you the way you're inspiring me right now? What was that one for you?
The one that inspired me is Misty Copeland. She's the first black principal dancer for the first and the only to date black principal dancer for the American Ballet Theatre. And the thing is that when you think about ballet, and she even said, you know, I just simply reached out to her. I asked her to come on the show, and she came. And that's the nice thing about having a show like The Real, because there's places where, you know, you won't see a Misty Copeland, even though she's creating history. And I was honored that she came on the show, because ballet is a European art. And she even said it on the show. She said, and I'm black. And, you know, she's 35 years old.
And wait a minute, not just black, but tall, muscular, doesn't have the body type that they think of when it comes to ballerinas.
And then she became a principal. And that's what happens. That's how this works, is that you hang in there, you hustle, you work really hard, and then you get recognized. And so when I'm trying to recognize people, I want to recognize the Ava DuVernay, so that inspires me. You know, Michelle Obama inspires me. Misty Copeland inspires me. So when people look at the show The Real and they think that it's just a silly show or it's not a, you know, serious show, we don't have to talk about politics to make an impact. The people that we bring on the show and the certain topics that we talk about are bringing impact to the show. That's what people have to understand. And that's what inspires me, and that's what really keeps me hanging in there and staying, you know, on. Plus, you know, I get to drink every now and then, and I get paid. So.
Well, listen, Lonnie Love is going to be at the Chicago Improv Friday and Saturday. That's Friday, March 2nd, Saturday, March 3rd. The Friday show is at 8 p.m. and 10:15 p.m. Saturday, 7 p.m. and 9:15. You can get your tickets at chicago.improv.com. And Lonnie, I just got to tell you, too. I mean, your story about being an electrical engineer. I was a business analyst at a retail corporation before I got into this entertainment thing, working three jobs at three different stations to make it work. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, going from that stable thing, but being unhappy to following your dream and, you know, seeing you continue to do it and continue to do it well, it's an inspiration to more people than you know. So I look forward to seeing you this weekend, to laughing with you, to growing with you, and seeing your growth continue to manifest on film, on camera, on shows, all that good stuff. So I appreciate you for kicking it with us this afternoon, evening, or morning, whenever y'all are listening to this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sweetie. Take care. See y'all Friday and Saturday at the Improv.
Well, I got a chance to talk to Mr. Benjamin Washington, and I must say that this man himself is a hero, because he was once a student at King College Prep, and he came back. He came back to give back to the kids in the community, not only the students, but the kids in the community. And I got a chance to talk to him about all of that. So check this out.
Well, my name is Benjamin Washington, director of bands at King College Prep High School. I'm also alumni from King as well, in class of 1988.
What have you learned so far as working with the kids and how it's helped their development with this program?
What have I learned? That there's no limit, you know, to what kids can do if they're given the, if they're being provided with the best opportunity experiences and social experiences ever. I mean, they can do whatever.
That's right. That's right. So what made you decide to put this together with them coming to check out Black Panther today?
Well, when I when my sons had told me during the summer the movie's coming out, and I said, okay, that should be a good movie to help students see themselves as being technologically advanced. You know, it's it's nice to see black people on the screen in a positive light other than, you know,
this
some
other
stuff.
This is an Afrofuturistic thing.
Right, exactly.
Right.
I mean, it's rooted in some... It is fictitious, but still, we talk about some of our people, the Dogon tribe, and their technological feats way before NASA and everyone. I mean, so this... I mean, it's sort of parallel.
That's right.
Who we really are.
You brought out the band, and then I also see they have a table set up with the robotics.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely, with building your own community. So this is a great way of just building that example for the kids so they know, like, it's no limitations.
That's
I think
right.
that you're doing a wonderful job.
Right.
You're doing an awesome job. So what is it about this film that you think is important, though?
For black people to see black people doing something positive and also being heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And also for other cultures to see that there's a level of respect to us as
well. So when these children leave this film today, what do you want them to take home with them?
That anything is possible.
He's so dedicated that this man took that time while they were watching the film. He went to go set up, make sure everything was right when they were done. So kudos to him. He's doing an awesome job over there at King College Prep. And once again, thank you for inviting me out. And up next, we're going to go ahead and talk to you, Judge Adrian E. Davis and Judge Toya T. Harvey.
We talk often on this show about educating people about things going on in the community, people that the community should know. And I can't think of guests that are more important for the community to be acquainted with than the two that we have. Marsha, who do we have in the studio right now?
We have two honorable ladies.
Yes.
We have Judge Toya Harvey and also Judge Adrian Davis.
Thank you guys for joining us.
Oh, we're happy to be here. We're happy to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Now, I had the chance to pseudo meet you guys over the weekend. I did a candidate's forum. Yeah, at Trinity Church, where you guys got a chance to come up and just give the information about your punch numbers. Now, you guys are on the ballot March 20th. First, before we dive into who you all are as people and some of the things that you're passionate about in the community and why you decided to be judges, talk to us about the process and how people can get out the vote and actually cast their ballots and how even voting for judges versus retention or how that whole thing works, just to start right from the beginning.
Well, we want to most importantly, I guess, to encourage people to get out and vote. If you're not registered to vote, please get registered to vote. If you are 17 years of age right now, but you'll be 18 before the general election in November, you can register to vote now and vote in the primary. As long as you'll be 18 by the general election in November, you can register to vote. So our high school students, get registered. A lot of the schools have the ability to get you registered. You can go to any of the courthouses. You can come to the Board of Elections downtown. We just really want to get people registered to vote. And then after you get registered to vote, get prepared for this election, which will be on March 20th. But early voting starts in a couple of weeks. So for those who are unable to get out to go vote, you can request a ballot online. You can do absentee ballot voting. College students, go online. My daughter is at Xavier University of Louisiana. I called her and her roommate a couple weeks ago. Now, while you're on the phone with mommy, you go ahead and get registered. So we got to get people registered and start looking.
And the voice you hear is that of Judge Toya Harvey.
Yes.
She is a judge of the Circuit Court of Cook County assigned to the 1st Municipal District. And she presides over cases in the Forcible Entry and Detainer Division. We know it as eviction,
right?
You know, and located at the Daly Center in downtown Chicago. And again, our other guest is Judge Adrian Davis.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Or hello. I think you also asked about the process of how we became judges. And
yes.
I'm going to, if I may, speak for both of
us.
Absolutely.
It was extraordinarily similar. Judge Harvey and I were both appointed by the Illinois Supreme Court in March of 2017. Both of us worked for the Cook County Law Office of the Cook County Public Defender as attorneys with the Public Defender's Office for over 20 years. Judge Harvey was in the 6th District, which was the Markham Courthouse, hearing homicide cases. She was part of the Suburban Homicide Task Force. I was at 26 in California, the George Layton Criminal Court Building, 26 in Cal. And for the last 8 years, I was in the homicide task force there. So we both came to the bench from the public defender's office doing homicide work. Judge Harvey is a Girl Scout leader. I'm a top teen advisor. We both live in the south suburbs within the second judicial subcircuit to which our appointment lies. And so we knew we were very similar and that we could never run against each other. We're also sorority sisters, right, in the same sorority. So we both applied for a single position of Judge James Rhodes. He's a retired judge. We went through an extensive vetting process and application process, being found qualified, recommended, or highly qualified by all bar associations. And then at the end of that interview process, Justice Amber brought us both in, and she appointed Judge Harvey to the vacancy of Judge Rhodes, and she appointed myself to the vacancy of retired Judge Marjorie Laws. So we sit in vacancies of retired judges, but we still have to run to keep our jobs.
Right.
So in order to remain a judge, we have to run and be elected by the people.
And Judge Davis is also in the First Municipal District of the Circuit Court of Cook County, and she presides over traffic violations, misdemeanor cases, and felony preliminary hearings. So thank you both once again for joining us. Now, sure. You talked for a second about the Cook County Bar Association and being recommended and what that process is like. I often talk about that being a resource for people who don't know much about the judges. You just see the names on the ballot and you're trying to figure out, you know, judge by the name who you should vote for. And talk about the Cook County Bar Association being one of those resources that people can go to decide whether or not, you know, these judges should be, I don't know, what's the past tense of retention?
Well, it's actually we have
retained.
To be elected. But we have to be elected.
Elected, okay.
Because even though we are sitting judges, unlike the people who are running against us, those are attorneys, we are sitting judges who have to go through election even though we are currently sitting in a vacancy.
Because you were appointed.
Because right. We were appointed.
Got
and
it.
And right at this point, let me just kind of give you a distinction as to who the judges are that you see on a retention list as compared to the other judges. So generally you see vacancy of James L. Rhodes, and then you'll see one or two candidates, three candidates listed. Those are individuals who are running for that seat. Some of us, like in my instance, it will be two different names there, although mine would just list my name. I actually am the judge who is appointed to that seat. So I am running now for the first time to make that now the seat of Toya T. Harvey. When you see retention, those are judges who are already elected to a specific seat, and they are running every 6 years to say whether or not they should be retained as a sitting judge in the county of Cook. So those are not running against an opponent. They are basically running on their record to say, yay or nay, this is a judge that we want to continue to serve in Cook County.
And why these are so important, you know, this podcast on Shopedia, you know, it's all about culture, primarily black culture, right?
Right.
And unfortunately, we find ourselves before judges more than any other demographic oftentimes, not only in what we call criminal court, but I mean, talking about evictions, whether it be traffic violations, et cetera, for various reasons, various systemic reasons. How can we better understand who judges are and how they rule in past cases so we can understand what their sensibilities are? So, for example, you know, I've spoken to judges in interviews past, and you ask them about cases, and they talk about how they show compassion in different situations, et cetera. But you won't get these stories unless you get to engage face to face. Are there any resources where we could readily look at some of the folks on that sample ballot and say, how did they act in the past? And is this somebody who we should vote for or elect?
At this stage, it's really difficult to say that there's one resource because
many.
Right. Our cases aren't published.
Right.
Because we are circuit court judges. Unlike a court of appeal or a Supreme Court, their cases are published, their opinions are published, so you can get a feel for how a judge votes, you know, more to the conservative side, the liberal side. That's not the case when you're talking about sitting judges. So your points of reference really are the public. Mm-hmm. It's really the people who come into our courtrooms, who see us, who talk to us, and the stories that they share in their community. I guess for us, we've been in churches and had someone come up and say, oh, that's my judge. That was my judge when I was, you know,
right,
when I went to court. And for a lot of them, you know, I think it says volumes if a person is willing to come up and say, that's the judge I was in front of, or my friend was in front of, and man, she was fair. She found my friend guilty, but she didn't slam him. She was respectful.
Right.
You know, I tell the story. I had a woman who came to court on an evictions matter, and she came up with her daughter, and she began to, I said, ma'am, it's your motion, you can go first. And she began to tell her story, and she began to cry. And then her daughter wanted to step up, and I said, no, let mama finish.
Mm.
And I let her say what she felt that she needed to say. And then when she finished, I explained to her, and I said, well, ma'am, let me go over this, and I said, so based on that, this is why I have to rule this way. And when she got through, she said, ma'am, thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I just want you to know we're proud of you.
Mm. Wow.
And so I had to, you know, I can't crown a bitch. But it lets me know that I'm doing something right. Even though I didn't grant what she requested, I was respectful mm-hmm. of her. And because of that, she'll go back and tell people, oh, no, I remember that one.
Yeah.
And I know Judge Davis has similar stories too.
Yeah, I primarily sit now at the courthouse at 111th. I consider it neighborhood court. It's in the community I grew up in. It's in the Pullman community, adjacent to the Roseland community. Mm-hmm. I'm a proud kid from 60628 Roseland community.
Hey.
And I actually haven't even told Judge Harvey this. She's heard the first part, but not the second. I had a young man in front of me few weeks ago, and I found him not guilty on a reckless conduct. And what's interesting, resisting arrest. What's interesting about the misdemeanor branch courts, I have you from the moment of arrest. If you were not arrested over the weekend, I'm the judge who sets your bond. I'm the judge who determines, do you go home? Do you go home on electronic monitoring? Mm-hmm. Will our community be safe if you go home? Or do I need to add some additional special conditions of bond to ensure that your rights are being preserved, but, you know, our mothers, our grandmothers will be able to safely walk the streets? Those are the decisions I make every day. This young man, I heard his case. I absolutely felt that he should be found not guilty of resisting arrest. But at the end of the case, it was the end of the afternoon, and I asked his attorney, could you sit back? Could you wait a bit? And I got off the bench. Court was done. I took off my robe, and I sat down, and I talked to him about his behavior and how his boys didn't get arrested because they kind of kept it cool. But he got a little hot-headed, and he talked more than was appropriate in that moment, and about the space of being a young black man in America. And sometimes you just have to slow up. Well, the part that Judge Harvey doesn't know is I talked to the attorney, I think yesterday, and this young man is part of a group. She wants me to come and talk to all those young men about being about how to act when they come into court and when they're with the police. And I hugged the young man before he left court, and that's mm-hmm. the thing that he is telling his friends. Man, the judge hugged me. She mm-hmm. hugged me. So those are the type of things as sitting judges we're right. able to do. And
you know,
I'm doing it in the community.
We just had a discussion mm-hmm. about that last week.
Yeah.
About how, you know, just respect. We don't know. Everyone's going through something.
Yes.
And we can teach each other a valuable lesson if we learn how to respect each other, or it's the approach.
Yes.
And we're in a position to give that positive love or affection that people need sometimes. Mm. We may not have the answer. We may not have what you want. We can't give you what you want at that time, but we have something that you can ponder on and make better decisions, hopefully right. in the future, you know. So we did mm-hmm. we did touch on that last week.
Yeah, we did. And even thinking about it, I'm looking at Judge Harvey's bio, and she quotes Luke 12:48 and says, to whom much is given, much is required.
Required.
Have you ever felt the weight of your office, and because of it, you feel like you have an obligation to not just do the job, but then to give that young man a hug or something.
Don't preach today. Don't preach today, sister. <You're right. laughs>
All right.
I told y'all I met them in the church. I told y'all.
That is so much a part of just who I am. You know, I can get excited when I talk about it because I understand that this job for me is ministry. Mm-hmm. That this is where I am, and part of what I always say, that I was appointed by God for such a time as this. I don't separate my culture, my spirituality, or any of it from who I am when I put that robe on. Because for me, when I'm on the bench and I'm listening to a case, sometimes in my head I'm saying, okay, God, give me the direction on how to make the right choice, the right ruling in this case.
Now, have you ever been judged yourselves by being a woman and being a black woman, and then they think, well, they're going to instantly sympathize, or, you know.
I get challenged, and I guess part of it is, you know, I realize I don't look 21 anymore, but I don't necessarily.
You sure?
You're not. Oh, bless your ministry right there. But I don't necessarily look my true age, and I don't look my experience. To say, you know, I have at this point going on 22 years of legal experience, having been, you know, first chair qualified as part of the capital litigation, a homicide defense attorney, tried, you know, many, many cases, that I might be relatively new to the bench, but I'm not new to this arena. And so I have to remind people, because I'm in a different area that I preside in, that, you know, just to be for real, don't get it twisted.
Right, right, right.
You know, I'm not a rookie to this. And so I have a lot of attorneys who appear in front of me who are not of the same gender, not of the same race, who will challenge who I am, and every now and then, and my clerks always tease me, because when I'm doing my call, I generally don't have my glasses on, or I have them down at the edge of my nose, so when my eyebrows go up and I look over my glasses and I say, counsel, for the last time, I'm going to remind you that when I have ruled, I've ruled, and we're not going to have any additional discussion. And so they snicker, but I mean that I know you're challenging me because of what you think you see, and we're not going to have that. And I'm respectful, and I talk to the defendants, because I have a lot of pro se individuals, or people who are not represented by attorneys, who come in front of me. And so I'm respectful when they come to the bench. I say, yes, ma'am, good morning, you're such and so. And yes, ma'am, or no, ma'am, because that's how I was raised. And I'm going to demand across the board that we're respectful. So, counsel, don't let me tell you again that I heard how you talked to the defendant, and that's not how we address parties in this courtroom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I'm serious about that, and I'm going to hold folks to it.
I'm laughing because, I mean, we can be all the way real on Shopedia, right? I mean, as both Marsha and I, Marsha looks much younger than she is. I think I look my age. I'm young, kind of. And we get that same thing, too. And it's frustrating, even in the format in which I had a chance to see you guys, when I'm talking to candidates, you wouldn't tell me how many times I walk past folks, I'm speaking, and I won't name the candidates, but sometimes they're dismissive and kind of, what's up? And then you sit down at the seat, oh, that's the moderator for this evening. You know, and it's disheartening,
right?
And it's difficult to avoid the impulse to try to overcompensate by demonstrating your experience and your breadth of knowledge.
Yeah, so you get very, very proper, and you have to now articulate.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Time, sir.
I'm gonna time, right.
Yeah, time. So I have to, you know, so you got to overdo it so they know, right. You know what you're doing. You know what I mean? And it makes it difficult. I want to ask Judge Day, like, as you were climbing up the ladder, because you've been doing this for quite some time, and you talked about pro se, and you've been a public defender before. Any advice to people who have had to kind of traverse that terrain?
In terms of
going through, battling through the perceptions based on their skin color or their gender or whatever they're perceived to be?
In the criminal arena or in general?
In general. In life and in the workspace.
In life, this is what I I'm a top teen advisor, so I advise young people. And I, one of the things I tell them, because I quote Different World, because that's how I live my life, by the TV
what
show.
What would Whitley do?
What would Whitley say? But there was an episode with Whoopi Goldberg, and it was Gina from Martin, Tisha Campbell. Campbell. Uh-huh. And in that episode, Whoopi was a speech teacher, and she told her, speak up, you are a voice in this world. Mm. And that's something I hold dear to. You are a voice in this world that deserves to be heard, and make people hear you, make them see you in whatever the arena. I do still understand that there are times you may have to work harder than everybody else. Yes. For whatever reason that may be. It may be because of the neighborhood you're from, because of your gender, or whatever. But whatever it is, be the best that you can be. In the words of Martin Luther King, if you are a street sweeper, then be the best street mm-hmm. sweeper you can be. Right. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what other people think. Know that you have stood up to show thyself approved before your God.
Mm. We've broken some records on this episode. We've quoted the Bible, A Different World, Dave Chappelle. I got one last question. What kind of water y'all drinking? What kind of cocoa butter y'all using? Because how do you have...
I'll be 50 in 2
what?
Weeks.
No, for real?
2 weeks, 2:15.
That's what I'm talking about.
So that means it's going to be a big celebration.
Check my website.
Because when Judge Davis said, I got daughters, I got lawyers who could have been my daughter, I'm like, wait a minute, this ain't adding up.
I was licensed to practice the bar in 1994. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, when you do, it goes to show, and do the work that enriches you and makes you look young, feel young.
It didn't wear on you. Your job isn't sending you home with bags and stuff.
Thank you. And I did mention my website. We probably should both mention.
Yes, please plug all of that. This is that moment.
We are both have Facebook pages, Citizens to Elect Judge Adrian Davis, or my webpage, Elect Judge Adrian Davis. On the ballot, I will be listed as Adrian Elaine Davis, my full government name, punch number 154 right next to...
Punch number 155, which is Judge Toya T. Harvey. My website is, and I am so horrible with technology, my website is Elect Toya T. Harvey, and my Facebook page is Committee to Elect Toya T. Harvey. So I think, you know, we appreciate the ability to come on here.
It's important to pick a good judge.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Very important.
Once again, those names, Judge Toya T. Harvey and Judge Adrian Elaine Davis. Thank you guys so much.
And I'm in the vacancy of Marjorie Laws, Judge Adrian Elaine Davis.
And the vacancy of James L. Rhodes.
And a perfect way to cap off our episode, honoring women in power.
That's right. So all month long, you can expect that. Women rule, Doma T.
I love it.
You better. And so next
I don't think I have a choice.
Hey now, okay? I ain't that far from you. And I'm a mama.
I'm telling you. Until next week in Shopedia, hopefully I get a chance to call you back in Ghana.
And next week, we will be talking to Doma T in Ghana. And I will be having the cast of Steel Magnolias on the show.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's fun
stuff.
Yeah,
that was one of my favorite films back in the day.
Fun stuff.
Originally, who was in there?
And you're going to
see a play?
Julia
Roberts was a star in that film. And this is a play, Steel Magnolias.
Same storyline. Dope.
A few African-American women in the play.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk. I'm going to talk to them.
That's wonderful. Shopedia.
That's right.